Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the CreditAccess Grameen Limited Q3 FY23 earnings conference call hosted by Elara Securities India Private Limited. As a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode. There will be an opportunity for you to ask questions at the end of today's presentation. Should you need assistance during the conference, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phones. Please note that this conference is being recorded. I would now like to hand the conference over to Ms. Shweta Daptardar from Elara Securities. Thank you, and over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Darwin. Hello and good evening, everyone. Welcome to the CreditAccess Grameen Q3 FY23 earnings conference call. From the management team, we have with us today Mr. Udaya Kumar Hebbar, MD and CEO, Mr. Ganesh Narayanan, Deputy CEO and Chief Business Officer, Mr. Balakrishna Kamath, CFO, and Mr. Nilesh Dalvi, SVP and Head Investor Relations. We will start the call with brief opening remarks and thereafter open for Q&A. At this juncture, on behalf of Elara Capital, I would like to thank the management team for giving us the opportunity to host the Q3 FY23 earnings call. I will now hand over the call to Mr. Udaya, sir, for opening remarks. Over to you, sir.
Thank you, Shweta. Good evening to everyone, and our sincere thanks for joining this conference call to discuss our third quarter and nine-month FY23 financial performance. The third quarter witnessed robust sequential improvement in business momentum, operating efficiency, asset quality, and return ratios once again. Thus, we conducted yet another milestone of surpassing rupees 200 crore in quarterly net profit. We are confident of sustaining this profitability and further improving it over the coming years, coming quarters. Our consolidated gross loan portfolio grew by 21.9% YOY and 7.5% QOQ to rupees 17,786 crore. On a period of basis, the growth stood at 22.8% YOY and 8.3% QOQ. Disbursement grew by 22.7% YOY and 10.8% QOQ to rupees 4,847 crore. The YOY disbursement growth appears to be little lower, but this was on a higher base on Q3 FY22, wherein we had already resumed growth encashing the opportunity of pent-up demand post-COVID 2.0. While we see good on-ground business momentum, our focus remained on driving calibrated portfolio growth led by new borrower addition along with maintaining superior asset quality. We reiterate our FY23 guidance of portfolio growth. Our consolidated active borrower base grew by 5.3% YOY and 3.7% QOQ to 39.4 lakh. We added 305,000 borrowers in the third quarter. At CA Grameen, our borrower base grew by 11.2% YOY to 31.3 lakh. On a period of basis, the YOY borrower growth was 17.2%. At MMFL, borrower degrowth was 13.3% YOY, in line with our estimate. However, on a period of basis, we had 14% YOY growth in MMFL also. Overall, we added over 9.8 lakh new borrowers in the last 12 months, with around 47% coming from outside the top three states, further enhancing our geographical diversification. We added 43 new branches, mainly in the newer states, taking our total branch network to 1,727 across these 44 districts. We shall open a few more branches in the fourth quarter, whereas higher focus will be more on leveraging on the headroom available over 500 branches opened in the last three years. Our collection efficiency and asset quality are amongst the best in class, supported by our robust operating process and controls. Consolidated collection efficiency during Q3 FY23 stood at 98% excluding arrears. GNPA at 60 DPD reduced from 2.11% in September to 1.71% in December 2022. PAR 90 reduced from 1.72% in September 2022 to 1.34% in December 2022. While net NPA at 60 DPD reduced from 0.77% in September 2022 to 0.59% in December 2022. Overall, ECL stood at 2.04% at end of Q3 FY23. higher than our GNPA, which is predominantly 6-year DPD. This is a consolidation business. Our NIMs have remained resilient on a rising interest rate scenario, giving us competitive edge in pricing to our customers. For the third quarter, our consolidated NIM stood at 11.9%. We had relatively higher liquidity during the quarter on account of foreign debt drawdowns and public NCD issuance, which accounted for ₹1,685 crore, or 49% of the total debt drawdown during Q3 FY23. Our adjusted NIM, excluding the impact of excess liquidity, was 12.1%. We draw comfort from the fact that our 9-month FY23 or a NIM of 11.5% is 60 bps higher compared to FY22 NIM, as guided at the start of the financial year. Our marginal cost of borrowing is little higher, with one-off spike to 10.2% during Q3 FY23, primarily due to higher proportion of long-term debt, which is foreign ECB, NCD, and public NCD. In incremental drawdowns, which came at a higher cost. Our cost of borrowing from banks, NBFCs, FI was stable on QOQ basis. Despite the higher marginal cost of borrowing in Q3, increase in share of foreign borrowings to 17% was 9% in Q2, raising public NCDs, and 225 basis repo rate increased by RBI in the past 9 months, we have been able to maintain our weighted average cost of borrowing, which increased only by 70 basis in the last 9 months, to 9.6%, which is very minimal increase. Our dedicated efforts to increase the proportion of long-term borrowings are coming to fruition, as the average maturity of liabilities on consolidated basis has increased over 24 months compared to 22 months a quarter ago, which will significantly strengthen our ALM position. We expect the cost of borrowing to normalize with the predominant share of bank borrowings in incremental drawdowns in Q4 FY23. For 9 months, FY23 weighted average cost of borrowing is within expected range of 9.3% to 9.4% for FY23, as guided at the start of the financial year. For consolidated basis, NA grew by 37.7% YOY to Rs. 567 crore, while cost-to-income ratio stood healthy at 36.3%, which is 300 bits lower YOY. PPOP grew by 38.7% YOY to Rs. 379 crores, demonstrating a strong operational profitability trend. Credit costs stood at Rs. 89 crores, which also includes the impact of the write-off of 131 crore as per the policy at 270 DPD. This was partially offset by 16.5 crore of bad debt recovery during the quarter. The credit cost at CAGMN is within the budget, while MMFL is slightly higher due to the relatively lagged collection trend in the last leg of the legacy book. However, we also note that we are witnessing a better bad debt recoveries from MMFL return portfolio. Further, the new book at MMFL based on CA Grameen model, accounting for 92% of share, has been displaying excellent portfolio quality. As a result of higher rate of witness from legacy book, which is currently at 8% of MFL book and 1.3% of the consolidated book, we estimate FY23 gross credit cost may be between 2.3 to 2.4%. On the net basis, including budget recoveries, the credit cost should be in the range of sub 2%. The impact of higher credit cost has been adequately built in into the revised pricing to the customers, hence our ROI guidelines is intact. On a consolidated PAT, significantly grew by 85.3% YOY and 23.1% QOQ to Rs. 217 crore during Q3 FY23, resulting in ROI of 4.6% and ROE of 18.8%. Till 9 months FY23, we have delivered a consolidated PAT of Rs. 533 crore with the ROI of 3.8% and ROE of 16.2%. We reiterate our FY23 guidance of ROA 4 to 4.2% and 16 to 18% of ROE. The Union Budget FY23-24, focusing on women empowerment, inclusive development, and reaching the last mile as a key driver towards India's 100 vision clearly highlights the importance of microfinance institutions' role in the capital creation story at the bottom of social pyramid. The host of measures that rupees 2 lakh crore central government scheme to supply free food grain to all poor and priority households, digital public infrastructure for agriculture on agriculture accelerator fund for increasing productivity and profitability, rupees 20 lakh crore agriculture credit target, 66% increase in PM Awas Yojana corpus to rupees 79,000 crore, revamped credit guarantee scheme for MSMEs, etc., are aimed towards strengthening the rural ecosystem and will benefit the rural financing opportunity over coming years and are big positive for the microfinance segment. I would like to quickly touch upon the few awards and recognitions recently won by CA Grameen. We have been certified as Great Place to Work successfully for the fourth time, being a testament of our inclusive work culture. We won the Certificate of Merit at the 26th South Asian Federation of Accountants Award for our 2021 edition of Integrated Annual Report and Corporate Governance Disclosures. We won the prestigious at the Inclusive Finance Summit 2022 Inclusion Segment by elites at the 12th NBFC 100 Tech Summit. Lastly, I would like to hand over the call to our Deputy CEO and CBO, Mr. Ganesh Narayanan, to share few quick updates with you all.
Good evening, everyone. Thank you, Uday, for your opening remarks. Along with a strong Q3 performance, I would like to take this opportunity to share two positive developments with all of you. Firstly, the Board of Directors have approved the extension of the term of appointment of Mr. Uday Kumar Hebbar as MD and CEO of the company for a further period of 2 years till June 2025 after the expiry of his current term in June 2023, subject to approval of the shareholders. Backed by his experience and guidance, the company is all set to move ahead towards this vision. The company also has a stable team of CXOs who are capable and well-equipped to manage the business scalability over many more years to come. Secondly, we are also happy to inform that the NCLT Bengaluru branch has today pronounced the order approving the scheme of amalgamation between CA Grameen and NMFL. The NCLT copy of the said order is awaited. We had earlier received approval order from NCLT Chennai branch on October 22. With this order, we can now proceed towards the amalgamation of NMFL with CA Grameen and present our FY23 annual financials as a merged entity. With this, we would like to now open the forum for question and answer session. Thank you all for your valuable time.
Thank you very much. We will now begin with the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. The first question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Hello, sir. Thank you for giving me the opportunity and congrats on the numbers. And thank you for the detailed presentation as well. So just wanted to check with you, are we still following the three lender cap in our as a prudent practice in acquiring your customer or for our existing customers?
No, we are not going for three lender norms, no, but we are capping our unsecured limit at 125,000
only. Okay, got it, sir. And sir, I wanted to understand, like, we've revised our credit cost for this year now, which is with respect to guidance. What is the thought process behind not upfronting it during this quarter itself? Because we would anyways have got clarity on the stress book, which would need to get written off. So just wanted to understand the thought process there.
Well, this is very, very small proportion of what you call Madura book, which is what we are finding is with a bit of lagged recovery in the old legacy book. But we are trying to recover as much possible, but we believe right now, as we already reached 1.9% on a consolidated basis, we believe the next rate off when we do, we may cross up 2.2 or 2.3%. but it will go as per the normal process instead of any accelerated process. So I think anyway, it will complete in the same financial year. That's why we are not taking a accelerated as a position. And then also we told that despite that slight increase in cost, our ROE is still intact, where the pricing is all anyway is covered that factor.
Okay, so just two follow-ups to what you said. So what is the write-offs that we are anticipating in 4Q? And as you said that like you're not revising the ROE guidance because NIM is likely to improve. So what is the NIM guidance for FY23 and 24 if you can provide?
Guidance for FY 2024, we have to come back. We'll definitely declare in the last fourth quarter. As of now, we'll not be able to give the 2023-24 numbers. But we estimate that the credit cost will get into a stable position, which already we talked earlier that the normal stable credit cost would go up, which will be between 1.5 to 1.6%. We will be within that only.
Okay. Got it, sir. So just wanted an overlap of our customers with players like BaFin, Ujjivan and Spandana. That's the last question, sir. Thank you.
Yeah, there's not too many variation which we earlier told. So the, all the major player, our maximum overlap is only with BaFin, which is about 14-15%. Other than that, all the others are less than 5% overlap.
Got it, sir. Thank you so much, sir. Thank you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, to ask a question, you may press star and one on your touchtone phones at this time. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. So firstly, if you can talk about borrower leverage, including all the financial institutions, since now we are capturing that data for last three quarters, how are the trends in that on the borrower leverage front for your customer base, including all the other financial institutions? How are the trends that you are witnessing?
So we have not observed too much variation at this point of time. Probably the change in regulation impact may take at least 2-3 more quarters, because majority of the players would have adopted only the Q3. Therefore, it's a little early to get the full detail. But we are not seeing too much variation, but we've seen little variation in the urban because of the family, somebody else also would have borrowed. So otherwise, and on the family level, right now we are not able to get a full picture as of now. Approval rates, I mean, why I'm telling is, our approval rates are still at the same level, just variation of 2-3% compared to pre-COVID level.
Sure. Actually, is there any update on the promoter selling, which has been in the news in the past? Is there any update on that?
So there is no other major update as we reiterated earlier. Many would have this question. Probably I can give a detailed answer so that all would have a common understanding. You know, so our promoter holds adequate cash position, and which is a very we have a very good global investor access. This can be seen by the fact that it has already fully capitalized its life insurance subsidiary and can sustain its future capital requirements. Further, a leading Italian bank, Intesa Sanopolo, has acquired about 2% in the promoter company recently, what they give a disclosure. Considering the merit to gradually improve the free float and liquidity in the CA Grameen stock, our promoter may consider one or few bilateral share sale transactions with selected high quality long term investors expressing interest in the proposal. But we would like to clarify that our promoter does not intend to offer any share in the market through an OFS or any other offer made by advisors. Any such transactions, if at all, may aggregate combined together up to around 10% over the medium term at a price level definitely reflecting the business fundamentals and growth prospects with a stable market condition, which in our view is not the case at the current market level. This also will allow us to onboard Mercury long-term investors who are not able to purchase meaningful quantity at this point of time because of the low floating stock. I would like to reiterate that the strategic view of our promoter remains to keep holding a clear majority stake in the company above 55%-60% over long term, even after considering any minor dilution as described above, and potential future capital raise plans of CA Grameen also. So I think there may be many things in the mind, so I thought give a bit long answer to cover entire. So there won't be supply coming through a market, so there's no positive trust case.
Sure, sir. And then lastly, the customers that they acquired in Karnataka, Tamil Nadu, which are supposed to be pretty well-penetrated geography, if you can share what percentage of these customers, for example, in Karnataka, we acquired some 1.8 lakh customers, in Tamil Nadu, we acquired 1.8 lakh customers. What percent of these customers are new to credit, new to microfinance or new to credit?
Yeah, out of 9.05 lakh customers acquired in last 12 months, about 47% customers are acquired from the core geography of Karnataka, Maharashtra, and Tamil Nadu. And the new to credit is between 25 to 30% in the Gujarat, maybe little 5% more in the Maharashtra. So it's Karnataka about 33%, Tamil Nadu about 27%, Maharashtra about 33-35% as a new to credit.
Okay. 35% in Karnataka, 25% in Tamil Nadu, and around 35% in Maharashtra.
27 in Tamil Nadu, 33 in Karnataka, about 25 in Maharashtra.
Sure. 41%.
Mm-hmm.
41. Okay. Great. Thank you, sir. Thank you. That's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Renish from ICICI. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi sir, and congrats on a great set of numbers.
Hi,
Dinesh. Yes, sir, just two questions. So one on this incremental branch opening in the PPT, wherein we can see that we are incrementally opening branches in Maharashtra. So what is the rationale? I mean, since we have acquired Madura, so that was the prime rationale of, the Madura will give us access to Maharashtra geography. So why
we
are incrementally opening branches in Maharashtra?
Maharashtra, we have not opened a branch for expansion, Janish. Maybe some places where the existing branch overgrown and we have to split and do one more branch. It's only for a local growth, not on expansion basis. So when the branch is overgrown beyond 7,000-8,000 customers in a single location, we normally create one more branch so that we can transfer and service better. Only on broad basis you open branch in Maharashtra.
Got it. And so secondly, again in Bihar, we have opened 19 branches in Q3 and we opened another 10 in Q1. So what is our experience in this geography? I mean, let's say collection efficiency.
Our experience is very good in all the northern states. Very, very liquid, very vertical. Portfolio quality, process quality, new customer, new to credit customer, all these are very, very good. In fact, in Bihar and all, we are getting 40-50% new to credit because we operate in the very, tier 3, tier 4 kind of cities and villages. Therefore, we are able to build, acquire new to credit and new customers and able to build a very good repayment culture also.
Okay. And so just last question on the growth side. I heard you in opening remarks, you are not giving guidance for 24. But just from a qualitative perspective, given our AUM size now, at what rate you guys will be comfortable, growing the MFI book? And along with that, if you can just highlight what we are doing on the new product side. And is this fair to assume that maybe a couple of years down the line, the new product segment might outpace the MFI growth?
Yeah. Overall growth, while we're not giving the all the line by line guidance, the growth we always maintain that we should be able to grow at a CAGR of 20-25% over next 4-5 years. I think, which is definitely possible. mix would be, it's including the microfinance and non-microfinance. So non-microfinance book, now that we are doing a lot of pilots, which are really giving a very good sign of future prospects, we should see a good traction in FY 2023-24. But including the all products, definitely our aim to grow is between 20-25%, which is definitely possible. And then, actually, as a CAGR perspective, 3-4 years, we are actually expecting such kind of growth.
And would you like to give any numbers or like any comments around what all new products we are piloting and at what scale?
Definitely. We are working on the key 5 products. One is individual loan for the matured customers, which is already piloted. We are working in about 192 branches. We are already dispersing almost near a crore every day. That is one. And we are working, we are also piloted the 2-wheeler loan, the just pilot. Only a few branches we started. And then that also again promising. And we are already running the loan against property book. Almost 5 crores per month we are discussing right now, but which is increasing trend, which is again quite promising. And then we are also piloting gold loan in about 5-7 branches. We will have to see little more pilot there because there is a difference in the type of growth between district headquarter branch to taluka headquarter branch. We form some variant, but we will test more. And we are working on a affordable housing which yet to be initiated. These are the 5 parts we are working. As I said earlier, the more will be pilot and the real traction we will see in the 2023-24.
Got it, sir. This is very, very helpful, sir. Thank you and best of luck, sir.
Thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Puneet Balani from Nomura. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Firstly, on the cost of borrowing debt, like you've said that this quarter, you know, in the PPT have mentioned that the because of the higher proportion of long-term debt, the borrowings came at a higher cost. So for Q4, you know, because you have taken on excess liquidity, like this for a quarter four perspective, the cost of funds will be relatively lower, right? If I'm not wrong, that way.
Cost of borrowing, which is marginal cost, that means borrowed for Q3 was little higher, whereas our cost of borrowing is stable at 99.5%. So in that quarter, the weightage, the marginal cost was little higher because of the long-term funds and NCDs what we raised. So therefore, the impact on the total borrowing is quite marginal. And also, Q4, we are planning to borrow majority from the banks, local banks, in the domestic borrowing. So therefore, our marginal cost and average borrowing cost also will remain in the same level for the Q4. And the marginal cost would come down because we would borrow more from the domestic banks for Q4. So that's a blip was only for Q3 borrowing, it's not the overall borrowing.
Okay. And the second bit on the, from the loan proportion from other than the top 3 states, or I might say the top 4 states, you know, it forms around 17% of your AUM. Is what you have mentioned. Any color on the slippage trends there, or like how are they over the current portfolio that the top 3 states portfolio, are they in line, like any color on that?
Our core market is very strong actually in terms of the quality of portfolio and the growth. But there's a very, very moderate growth in the core market because already our base is quite high. So normally maybe a low. Whereas other states, which is newer one, will actually grow much faster. While average is about 25%, if you see as we open more and more branches, the northern state are giving the higher proportion of growth. To give an example, what we acquired customer in the last several months, 53% of customers we acquired from the northern states. 49% acquired from northern states, 53% only from the top 3 states. So same type, the branch we opened, almost 95% of branches already opened in the northern states. So automatically all the growth, the new growth is coming from the northern state. But core state will give a stable portfolio and the reasonable small growth from the majority from existing customers and very little from new customers.
Okay. Right. And then like on the asset quality bit, like are these guys saying what like you're witnessing slippages or anything? Any color on that? Any qualitative would do.
So what we believe is, you know, the current year our overall asset quality, what we said credit card would be about 2.2 to 2.4%. Whereas next quarter we believe next year that it will be between 1.5 to 1.6%. We are witnessing similar exit rate of slippages actually, so which is witnessing that way. So that's why, you know, current year is based on the legacy books. But with legacy books are getting cleaned up in this year, we should be getting into the 1.5 to 1.6% kind of rate cost going forward.
Okay, sir. All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nikhil from Nippon. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi, sir. Thanks for the opportunity and congratulations on a great set of numbers. Just a couple of questions from my side. First is to clarify, you indicated that the promoters won't be selling any share in the open market. That would be primarily the bilateral transaction. Am I right?
Yeah, block transaction.
Okay.
No block deal or no book building, that kind of thing. It will be even if we do, we identify the right monkey.
Strategic investor only.
Yes, correct.
Okay.
Basically, the idea is to enhance the broad base, the long-term good investor base, to enhance the float also. So basically, to meet the both sides of the requirements.
Right. Sir, my second question is, if I look at our cost of borrowing, I agree that it has been increasing since past couple of quarters, and so has been our yield in line with our expectations. But if I look at the margin profile, margin actually on a QOQ basis has declined. I mean, from 12% to 11.9%. Of course, I agree the fact that we have excess liquidity. But that excess liquidity was also available in Q2. So if I have to net off this thing, what would be the stable margin we can look at from here on?
So actually, no, I agree. It was around 12% in the Q2, and 11.9. About 11 dips lower from Q2 to Q3, because of the weighted average liquidity was quite high during the quarter. So in the Q2, we have excess liquidity only at the end of the quarter, not the average actually.
Okay.
So actually, the cost will go up. Carrying cost is the average book. You're almost more than 8% was our liquidity during Q4 because we raised money in November and we could not deploy immediately on this month. So therefore, the change difference between Q2 and Q3. Whereas our continuous NIM should be between 11.75 to 12%.
Okay, so that should be sustainable NIMs from here on, right?
Correct. That is one. Number two, what we said at the start of year that we would get eventually about more than 1 to 1.2% higher NIM over 2 years time, whereas 60 bits we would achieve in the current financial year, whereas we already achieved that 60 bits, which we guided at the start of the year.
Right. So for next, say FY24, the margins would be 50 to 70 bits higher from this even 12%, right?
So it takes 12 to 12.25, because there are two other factors will play Nikhil. Also the leverage will play a bit, because today your equity is about 24%, it's become 22%. To that extent your NIM will change, right? The slight variation, 12 to 12.5 is the expected NIM.
Okay. Perfect.
So we need to adjust the leveraging also.
Yeah, I got that. The last question from my side. Incrementally, we have been opening majority of our branches outside our core states. And specifically, if I look at, this is primarily in the northern states like UP, Bihar and all. So going forward to 3 years down the line, what could be the share of these other states, or how do we see the share of Karnataka, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu and others in our entire scheme of things?
Yeah. If you look at, let's say, assume 3 years, currently also our 35% of our branches are outside the core states already, which will start adding customers, adding portfolio. So we should be looking at, you know, Karnataka, for example, which is currently at about 34%, should actually move towards 25-26% by next 3 years time.
Okay.
Similarly, other states also will come down.
Okay, perfect. So Karnataka, Maharashtra, Tamil Nadu, all three will start trending down and the other states will trending down.
Yeah, it should be, total should be less than 60% by next 3 years time with the stable environment.
Okay, so for these three states, it should be less than 60% in next year itself.
Not next 3 years.
Next 3 years. So, okay. Professor, that's all from my side. All the best for the future. Thank you.
Thank you, Nikhil.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Nilesh Jethani from BOI Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, good evening, gentlemen, and thanks for the opportunity.
Sorry to interrupt. The line for you is very low, sir, on volume. If you could please speak closer to the mic.
Am I audible now?
Yes, this is much better, sir.
Yes.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity and congrats for the great set of numbers. My first question was, when I see your presentation, I see the loan officer growth in the range of 11-12%, but when I see the borrower count, it is in the range of 5-6%. So can you help me understand the disparity? The loan officers are being hired at a higher number, but that is not being reflected in the borrower count.
You know, if a loan officer to borrower, there is some variation when we open new branches. What happens, we opened 43 new branches. That means we added about 5,400 new employees also. So which makes that variation. And one, number two, we need to, the loan officer built for the normal business in the queue, and you would have wrote off large number of customers also. These two are impacted a small variation in the overall a borrower per loan officer. So otherwise, it's always stable.
Got it. So going forward on a sustainable basis, when you guide for a 20-25% kind of AUM growth, what could be attributed as a volume and what could be attributed as a value or the AUM per borrower growth? So should I repeat my question?
I think I remember what you were talking is about the loan officer versus the number of borrowers. What I said that when we open the new branches and then planning to open new branches, we will hire more employees, which will make it changes in terms of the averages. And then number two, we also had a rate ups during that quarter, which also had an impact on the averages. So it's not very large, it is very small actually, but it goes up and down in the quarter when you do these two activities. Hope I answered your question.
So going forward on a sustainable basis, say if you are guiding for a 20-25% kind of a growth, so what portion could be attributed to borrower count growth and what portion could be attributed to AUM per borrower count growth?
So it will be a mix of that's of three factors actually. One is borrower growth, another is GLP per borrower. That is because of the growth coming from the existing customers. What we normally observe in our business or on the sustainable basis is 60-65% of growth comes from existing borrowers. About 20-25% growth comes from existing borrowers. Sorry, new borrowers in the existing branches, and the balance 10-15% growth comes from the new customer and then from the new branches. While the overall basis, we observe that about, we were planning that about 10-15% will be the borrower growth, and then the 20-25% will be the customer growth. Sorry, portfolio growth. These are the combination we are looking at.
Got it. So that was really helpful. And one last question on the NIM.
So one last question on the NIM. I believe last time we were talking about adding, making about 10 to 15% of the portfolio mix via asset-backed loan. So I wanted to understand where are we in that process today, and if that share has to increase to 15%, how sustainable do you think NIMs are at current level?
No, no, currently we are at a very, very small portion because the current investment in Madura is treated as non-microfinance book, and we are not growing that book earlier. We are changing the model. We are more on a pilot right now. Probably about 100 crores is our portfolio right now, and then the more traction will be in the next year. But you know, if you look at the long-term perspective, anybody who started the asset that book and then the MSME book, it took at least 4 to 5 years to reach 5-6 thousand crores. So our idea is that we should reach 5-6 thousand crores in 4 to 5 years time. So therefore, you know, by that time, probably 10 to 12% of the overall portfolio. So we are not in a hurry. We want to make the model right before scaling up. And it's a new business for us. We also are planning very steadily and stable. First pilot, on a successful pilot, we'll get into scalable mode, which we would see in FY 2024.
Got it, sir. Got it. That was really helpful, and thank you so much for replying to my questions.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Participants who wish to ask questions may please press star and one at this time. The next question is from the line of Nidesh Jain from Investec. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir, again. Sir, on the disbursement, why the growth in this quarter was muted? If I look at growth on last year, base last year also, YOY growth in Q3 is not that high, 3-4% YOY in last year. And on that base also, the growth is just 3% YOY this quarter. So what is the reason for disbursement growth being slow in this quarter?
So this, I think I explained that during my initial remarks. So it looks little low because our base was high. And last year, we started our business quite ahead of the industry, and we actually used the entire pent-up demand in the Q3. Therefore, this was quite high in the last year Q3. So therefore, it looks like it's little low comparatively. That's all. So I think the next quarter also, next quarter we will have a higher opportunity and we will do more. And currently it is basically the comparative to Q3, which was the early getting into the, using the pent-up demand mode after COVID impact. If you remember, in the August itself, we started expanding branches, acquiring customers, and the Q3 we really scaled up our business last year. So we are comparing with the very high disbursement to the not disbursement.
And so what is the run rate that we achieved in the month of January, disbursement run rate?
We were about 18 to 1900 crores.
Okay. Thank you, sir. Thank you. That's it from us.
Consol business.
Yeah, thank you.
Thank you. We have the next question from the line of Prolin Nandu from Goldfish Capital. Please go ahead.
Udayji, thanks a lot for giving me the opportunity. First question from my side would be, you know, when this NBFC MFI regulation had come, we had certain expectation into as to how this will change the scenario in terms of how it will increase the size of the opportunity for a player like us. Now, since then, few quarters have passed, and to one of the earlier participants' question that we are still not getting enough data in terms of the overall borrowing of the household. So, and obviously, you know, it also depends on how each and every MFI or MFI player is, you know, interpreting and executing this revised regulation. So as we stand today, do you still feel that the, I mean, this is net a positive, and the quantum of, you know, benefit that a player like us will get is same as what we had thought of when this regulation had first come?
Yeah, definitely, yes. Actually, there is a... So why delay in getting the data is regulator allowed 6 months more for compliance by everybody. If you see, October 1 was the effective date. That means it's the first quarter of the new regulation for everybody. Therefore, we believe that difficult to get the data fully to understand. Probably after a quarter, we'll be able to get little more data on a family level, at the borrowing level, all those things. So if you ask me, our own borrower data, you know, you have to go, even if you take as on December, we will not get a full meaningful data for the entire set of customers. Therefore, probably it's better to wait one more quarter to get a meaningful data. That's why I said difficult to get data fully right now, because implementation only started in Q3 by many of the players. But from a overall basis, this will definitely help a lot in terms of the segment in microfinance, in terms of growth, in terms of the expanded microfinance customer base itself, and then some of the easing out of the regulation, leverage in terms of, or rather, level playing field in terms of pricing for everybody, and then the really the market-driven approach will start going forward in kind of microfinance. And then the last one is, you know, more of a legitimacy, or you can say a matured business model. It is clear acceptance of matured business model from a regulatory point of view to showcase saying that this is a common business for everybody. So all these things are definitely positive. Top of that, there's a good support from government when it starts with the guarantee schemes and the TLTRO funds earlier. So I think overall there's a huge focus towards this, Bharat actually. So therefore we feel this is a good opportunity for us to grow. And on the other side, if you look at the overall potential market, you know, if you take any trade of calculation, there is about almost 170 million of customers are supposed to be within this threshold for microfinance lending. Even if you count 67 crores or 60-70 million are excess, you still have about 90 to 100 million borrowers who yet to get a formal finance. So, and majority of them in rural. So with all things in place, with the legitimate and the improved business environment, we believe that this will be a good opportunity for the sector to grow. And we strongly believe we have very long highway to go here.
Sure, sir. And the second question would be that we have, we continue to invest in our tech platform, right, both on the front end and at the back end. So where are we now when we probably compare it with our peers across different entities, right? I mean, you know, it could be banks or it could be other NBFCs or it could be small finance banks as well. In that transition or the, where are we now in terms of our tech versus the rest of the competition at both front as well as back end?
We always look at tech initiatives as the core for this kind of mass volume, the large volume transactions. Therefore, we invested core banking way back in 2015. Probably even now, our peers in microfinance doesn't have core banking solution, if I understand correctly. Okay. So whereas we kept on upgrading it, we kept on enhancing the platform, and then today, every employee uses mobile, as I said, front-end platform, all information, majority of our operations are paperless. This is one of the reasons that we are one of the low-cost operators since beginning. And if you see, here for at least 6-7 years, we have been one of the lowest operating cost company because of the efficiencies what we built using this strong tech internal as well as the between branches in our office, the back-end processors, underwriting, the data analysis, data warehouse. So we invested heavily in it, and we believe we are in the right architecture, which is sufficient for us to take us to next level.
Very clear, sir. Last question from my side would be, do you envisage a capital raise in any time next year? And if that is the case, can there be a, what is management thought process of probably
do it together with the promoters, offloading some part of it as well. So, just some clarity on this part.
Yeah, it is. It's currently, we at the consolidated level, we have capital adequacy about 24%. And then we believe this is sufficient for us to next 4 or 5 quarters. Maybe after by end of FY 2023-24, we may start working towards the next set of capital raise, as we always believe that we should hold capital adequacy more than 20%. So at that time we will look at, it's a more of a QIP kind of thing, but we have to decide when and what amount and how we'll do it.
Thanks.
As I said earlier in your comment, as I said, during one of other questions, promoter doesn't need any funding actually. They don't need any, but they have met all their capital requirements, even for the insurance investments. So they don't need any funding because it's more of a, more of a QIP raising more money. That's all.
Thank you, Udayji. Thank you for the answer. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Shripal Doshi from Equirus. Please go ahead.
Thank you, sir, for giving me the opportunity once again. So just two questions. Firstly, what is the approach we are deploying for a customer that has been written off by any other lender or by us? Like, is there an approach of cooling period for the customer or things like that? So what is the approach for a return of customer?
See, it is not customer. If the data is available in the bureau, for other customers, we are not taking. We are not lending such customers. In our customer, if we know the customers well, if the rate off, but they paid back the value, paid back to us, so if the group and center approve them to take, then we will take. So if the other, we don't take them.
Okay, got it, sir. And then the last question was with respect to liquidity. So what is the liquidity that we want to maintain as a business as usual approach?
So our internal policy is to maintain the overall liquidity between 5 to 8%. On an average, at about 7% of the AUM, which is ideally sufficient for a stable period.
Got it, sir. Got it. Thank you so much, sir. Good luck for the next quarter.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Karthik from Unify Capital. Please go ahead.
Good evening, sir. Congratulations on the good set of numbers. So we would like to understand the co-lending strategy, sir. What is your thought on co-lending?
Sorry, not able. I think you are too close to mic or something. Not able to. Can you repeat?
The current participant in the queue has dropped from the queue, sir.
Okay.
We have the next participant in the queue. Question from Nishit Vora from Ilara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hello.
Yes, hi. Go ahead.
Hi, Nishit.
Good evening, sir. Thanks for letting me ask a question. I have a few questions. One would be, when do we see that NIMS and ROA normalize after incorporating the positive benefits that accrue from the new RBI norms? And second question would be, what would be the ROE guidance in long term that we see?
Okay, so from RBI regulation change and then the related price change should give us the stable ROE, stable NIM. It will take about 24 months to get full benefit, because majority of our lendings are either 24 months or 36 months. So currently, probably this financial, we got about 50% benefit. So another 50% maybe another 12 months time. That is one. So the second one is about the long-term guidance on the stable business. On the stable business, we believe our ROA will be between 4.5 to 4.75% or even go up to 5%. Relatively, since we are actually wanted to maintain minimum 20% adequacy, so ROE should be around between 18%-19% to 22%-23%. That is what we expect in the stable period.
Also one more question, sir, if you don't mind. What would be the borrowing mix ahead that you expect?
Yeah. One of the strategic view we have been working is to strengthen our ALM. As you know, I want to have a very stable ALM diversified beyond borders. Idea is on the long term to get at least 30%-35% international borrowing, which is long-term and stable. Then other borrowing such as DFIs in India or, you know, public NCD, a kind of, again, a long-term borrowing is again another 15% kind of thing. The balance will be the normal domestic PSL-linked bank borrowings, you know, which is it could be maybe about 5%-10% we may still go with the DA or securitization on a regular basis. The balance 30%-40% or 40%-50% will be stable domestic bank borrowings. This is the borrowing mix which will give us advantage of very good positive ALM mismatch, very stable cash flow as well as a long-term advantage.
Great. Thank you so much, sir, for that. That helps a lot.
Thank you.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraints, that was the last question. I now hand the conference over to Ms. Shweta Daptardar for closing comments. Over to you, ma'am.
Thank you, Darwin. On behalf of Elara Capital, we thank CreditAccess Grameen management to provide us the opportunity to host the earnings call. Thank you all.
Thank you very much. On behalf of Elara Securities India Private Limited, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your lines.